gathering her father up in her arms as best she could. "For you," Lord Derwin said, his voice a wheezing rasp. He touched her face. "I did it for you, Ludovine." Her skin humming with furious energy, Riel turned away to scan the gaping crowd. When she found who she was looking for, watching her in amazement from the center of the yard, she approached him at once. "Your Holiness," she bowed, then spoke loudly enough that everyone gathered could hear. "I wonder if you might accompany me to the firmament. I would like to pray to Saint Gervon, and to the wind for sparing my life. And I can't think of anyone else I'd rather have for company." The Chevalier joined her, tossing its head. The Archon could not stop staring up at the creature, his face gone deathly pale.
"I don't understand," he muttered. "All the gods' beasts are dead. Lady Riel, how did you do this?"
It was a question she had herself been wondering. "I was going to die," she answered honestly. "And I asked the Imperium to save me. I had been drugged and could not use my power, so..."
"Oh, the Imperium sent you this?"
The Archon gestured helplessly at the Chevalier. It snorted and bumped Riel's shoulder with its nose. For the first time since Riel had known him, the Archon seemed rather at a loss. "Shall we?" she offered him her arm. "To the firmament." Without a word, the Archon took it, and as they proceeded across the crowded yard, he said quietly,
"Be careful, Lady Riel. This is no longer a matter of trials in costumes."
He glanced back at the Chevalier, which followed them at a distance. The awestruck crowd crept as close as they dared. Some ran away in a panic, shouting warnings.
"The Imperium has helped you today, but it may not always do so. It is my duty to test you. I do not wish to see you consumed."
"Don't you?" The Archon did not respond to the tease in her voice, and when Riel glanced over at him, she saw a new expression on his face, drawn and thoughtful. That sent a thrill through her body. She couldn't decipher the sensation. "Fear?" Corian's voice came crooning. "Or
appetite?"
Chapter 38. Eliana. Not all angels are alike, and not all worship at the Emperor's feet. There are those who have taken pity on us and believe the Emperor's actions to be cruel and unjust. They remain bodiless and are considered traitors to their kind, all in order to ally with humans, descendants of those long-ago saints who once drove the angels into the deep. The word of the prophet. Eliana sank to the floor with a tiny dark laugh and rubbed the heels of her palms against her eyes. "I don't have time to sit around listening to whatever this is, and whatever you are." Eliana struggled to her feet and moved to the door. She was hallucinating. She was talking to a hallucination.
"My name is Zara," said the wraith.
"Right.
Rosen is not here."
Eliana turned, a slow panicked feeling unfurled in her chest. She kept her face blank. "Who's Rosen?"
"The woman you think is your mother, but truly is not."
"Do you know a way out of here?" Hallucination or not, if she could use it to escape, she would.
"Yes."
"Then either show it to me or fuck right off, would you please?" Zara raised one floating eyebrow.
This is not how I had imagined you would be.
Sorry to disappoint, Eliana resumed pounding on the door with angry clenched fists. The wraith appeared between her body and the door. Eliana's fists flew through the wraith's torso. Her balance tilted, her vision phased in and out of focus. She backed quickly away.
What is that? Every time you come near me,
you feel ill. Zara nodded sadly. It is a common human affliction when in the company of wraiths. You'll get used to it over time. Others have. Though you seem to be affected far more than most. Unsurprising, given your ancestry. Your sensitivity to changes in the Imperium is undoubtedly tremendous.
Eliana glared at the floor. Get me out of here.
Wait a moment.
Get me out! The wraith rose to her full height once more, her black eyes flashing.
We can't leave yet. We must wait first until the shift change is complete, and second, for you to calm down, so I can be assured you won't do something rash and endanger yourself.
Zara exhaled sharply, considering her.
Simon's message was accurate. When you're angry, you very much resemble your mother.
How unsettling. Eliana shook her head. This is quite an elaborate delusion.
Zara raised one amused eyebrow. I assure you, your mind is quite sound.
You know Simon, do you?
I do, though only through messages passed through the underground. I serve the Prophet, and so does he.
The Prophet this, the Prophet that, Eliana muttered, rubbing her temples. Who is this man, and why does everyone fawn over him so? What does he want anyway? There has to be more to him than simply some noble, selfless desire to save the world from tyranny. And how long has he been around? Is there one prophet or many?
You certainly have many questions. I don't blame you.
Zara drifted to the door, cocked her head, listening.
But perhaps we'll wait until a bit later for a Red Crown history lesson.
Your Red Crown?
Obviously. As I said, I serve the Prophet.
Eliana longed to punch something. What are we waiting for exactly? I promise I won't act rashly. Is that what you want to hear, my imaginary little friend? All my rashness has fled, I swear it.
Zara's black mouth thinned. No matter how long I spend among humans, I sometimes forget that I must actually put voice to my thoughts for you to understand.
As opposed to...
When I speak to my own kin, Zara explained. I have no need for words.
Wait, you... Could Remy have been right? Were the old stories true after all? You mean mind speak?
Zara inclined her head.
Eliana's blood ran cold. Suddenly the idea of conversing with her own hallucination no longer amused her. You're an angel.
Once I was. But no longer.
Well, said Eliana, retrieving her tray from the floor. If I hadn't already decided to mistrust you, I certainly do now.
I understand that compulsion. Our two races have not always been friendly.
What is it you want with me?
To take you home, Zara said patiently. As I told you before.
To Orlean? Why?
Not Orlean. Seldaria. We cannot go immediately there, of course, but...
I've never even been to Seldaria,
Eliana snapped, though her stomach tightened unpleasantly at the name of the Far Eastern Kingdom. Her vision of the Emperor returned to her, as though it had been carved into her mind and coated with dust, and now a sharp wind had uncovered it.
"You have once," Zara argued. "My queen, you were born there."
"Ah, I see. Of course I was."
Zara frowned. "You're mocking me."
"Tell me what you want me to know, and I'll say yes to it all, and I'll believe what you want, as long as you get me out of this cell and help me find Na'vi."
"I'm afraid I can't do that."
"But you just said..."
"Princess Nirvana is not our priority. Nor, I must add, is Rosen Ferrocora. You, Eliana, are all that matters. To Red Crown, to the Prophet, to all enemies of the Empire."
"If you don't help me rescue Na'vi and then help me search for my mother, I will make every last second of your life a miserable and agonized one."
"I doubt that," said Zara. "As you will die long before I will."
Eliana froze. "Is that a threat?"
"It is a fact. You are a human. I was once an angel, and now I am forever trapped as this."
She reached down with long-fingered hands, picked wistfully at her robes.
"I will live long past the age when the last human walks the earth. And yet, if given the chance to step backward in time, I would make the same choice."
Eliana narrowed her eyes. "What choice is that?"
"I would choose to stay in this form, stripped of all physicality, rather than be resurrected. What so many of my kin have done is abhorrent."
At Eliana's blank expression, Zara sighed.
"Am I to assume from the look on your face that you, the Sun Queen, are unfamiliar with the stories of how the world once was?"
"I know the stories," Eliana bit out impatiently. "My brother won't shut up about them." Zara's expression softened into something like pity.
"Simon sent word about him as well. Remy, yes?"
Tears rose hot and sudden in Eliana's eyes.
"Don't you dare say his name!"
Zara reached for her, then closed her hand and floated back.
"I wish I could touch you and give you comfort, my queen. That is the thing I miss most of all about my body."
Eliana looked to the ceiling, willing her eyes dry.
"You may call me Eliana. Nothing else."
"As you wish, Eliana. But whatever name I use, it does not change the truth. You are my queen, and I serve you with great joy."
"Then," Eliana said through her teeth, "get me out of here."
"I have always intended to do so," Zara said patiently, gesturing at the door. "The shift change is underway. In 5 minutes, once the new guards have settled into their posts, it will be safe to move. Believe me, my queen, I would not keep you here longer than absolutely necessary."
"I will start pounding on this door and ruin our supposed escape if you don't open it this instant."
"And here I thought all your rashness had fled."
"I'm not joking, whoever you are."
"Zara."
"Yes, right."
"Anyway, feel free to pound on the door all you like," said Zara, folding her vaporous arms smugly across her chest. No one will hear you.
Eliana narrowed her eyes. And why wouldn't they?
Though I may no longer look like an angel, and though my mind is not what it once was, I can still use it. And right now, I am using it to make the vermin of Fidelia forget you are here.
Eliana's heart pounded hard in her ears. You mean, you're hiding me?
As best I can, yes.
Zara hesitated.
Though once Emyaza finds us, that will change. Wraiths are not strong enough to deceive other wraiths.
Semyaza.
He serves this faction of Fidelia. He helps them hunt, disguises them, and distracts their prey. It was him you sensed in Sanctuary.
Zara turned up her nose.
You'll find, Eliana, that not all wraiths are as enlightened as I am.
What does he want? Why is he helping them?
Semyaza hopes that if he serves the Empire loyally, then once the Emperor has found the Sun Queen and bound her to him, Semyaza will be resurrected. He will have earned a body. At last.
Eliana shook her head, stepping away from Zara. I don't understand what you're saying. Resurrect it.
It would be easier to show you, Eliana, if you'll permit me to take hold of your mind.
She tilted her head toward the door.
We have just enough time for it.
Take hold of my mind, like the Emperor did.
What?
The drifting tendrils of Zara's hair and robes went rigid.
You have spoken with the Emperor.
At an outpost, several days ago. I was with Lord Morbray. He looked at me and something changed. I saw the Emperor. I was in Seldaria somehow. I couldn't see anything very well, but I could see enough. And the Emperor, he found me standing there, and he knew me. I don't know if he was happy or furious to see me, and I don't know which is worse.
Zara closed her eyes. Simon did not send word of this. Oh, he has seen you. He knows, then, that you are alive.
Why does the Emperor care who I am, or that I'm alive?
The Wraith's huge dark eyes were terribly sad. May I show you, Eliana?
Zara whispered.
Forgive me, but it will be easier for me than words.
She shook her head, sank to the floor.
This is a shock. This is an awful blow.
Eliana crouched before her.
You swear to me that my mother isn't here?
Zara peeked out from behind her hair.
Yes. Simon's instructions were to send word if any of us found her. But I have not.
Wait. Eliana's body drew tight as a bowstring. He knew that Fidelia took her. Zara nodded miserably.
We were all told to look out for her.
So? Simon had known. He had known who had taken her mother. And Eliana suspected he had known Fidelia was behind the other abductions, too. And he had not done a thing about it. He had led her across the country on this wild quest without so much as a whisper of the truth. She gripped her knees hard and stared at the stained stone floor of her cell.
I will kill him for this.
You may show me what you want to show me, she said, her voice trembling with barely contained fury. as long as you then help me find Na'vi before we leave this place. Do we have a bargain?
Zara nodded. Yes, Eliana. I pledge this to you.
Eliana gave her a grim nod. Then do it quickly. Without warning, Zara collapsed into a twisting cloud of light and shadow. Her new shape resembled great, jagged black wings. Then she rushed at Eliana and disappeared, and Eliana opened her eyes, and she saw. Unlike when she had seen the Emperor, this vision was all too clear. There was no fog blocking her sight. She felt the steaming hard ground beneath her feet. The air was close, rippling with heat. Her nostrils burned from the ash, darkening the air. Movement at the corner of her eye made her turn. A woman stood watching her, tall and ebony-skinned, wearing a suit of tarnished platinum armor. Her thick white hair fell in braids past her hips, and gold paint rimmed her dark eyes. Massive wings of shifting light and shadow spanned out from her back.
Zara,
Eliana whispered. Even Zara's small nod was magnificent.
As I was during the Angelic Wars. Before the gate, before the long curse of the deep, and the loss of my body.
Then she pointed.
Look, Eliana.
Eliana squinted across the fire-ribboned plain, and images rushed at her like the horrors of a nightmare. A woman stood on a distant flat plinth. She raised her arms and carved a blinding door from the sky. A castle flashed white, then fell, and from the abyss around it rushed a wave of ruin. There was a cry of pain and fear, a chorus of thousands, millions, and then silence. The screams of a woman in a bloodied bed. A baby held tightly in the arms of a boy. Eliana peered over the boy's shoulder, and she knew as she stared at the infant that the face looking back up at her was her own. Then she turned to see the boy, and a vastness of black, filled with screams too alien to belong to either human or animal. There was a light on the horizon and a figure standing beside it. Eliana cried out, crushed by the lonely weight of this place, and ran toward the light. She was back on the firelit plain, watching a woman kneel beside a dismembered, blood-soaked corpse. The woman's back was to Eliana. She wore a suit of black armor and a crimson cloak. The woman moved pale hands over the corpse, knitting across skull and collarbone, down chest and across severed hips. The air around the corpse shimmered, shifting. And then the woman sat back, calm, and the corpse jerked, gasped, and staggered to his feet. He was no longer a corpse. His skin was whole and new, his limbs intact. He took a few unsteady steps before falling to his knees. He looked down at his body, and then threw out his arms and shouted to the skies with joy, with relief, with fury. The woman rose, smooth and silent, to her feet.
You're working faster now,
said the man beside her, whom Eliana had not noticed before.
Well done.
He drew the woman into an embrace, and Eliana stood frozen in horror as their faces came into view. The woman was dark-haired and unspeakably beautiful, with a face so pale and faultless it could have been carved from porcelain, save for the shadows stretching dark beneath her green eyes and the small, hungry smile curling her mouth. Eliana brought shaking fingers to her own lips.
My mouth, she thought, and then touched the brittle ends of her own tangled dark hair. My hair.
And the man standing beside this woman, blue-eyed instead of black, but with the same lovely pale face and untroubled poise
that grace the painted portraits in Lord Arkellion's palace. Black hair, mud-caked cloak, a blood-stained sword at his belt. He guided the woman's mouth to his, and she clung to him as if their kiss was the only reason she remained standing. The Emperor. Eliana frantically backed away, tripped over another corpse, fell to the ground hard. The world shifted, darkened. She blinked. She had returned to her cell, and Zara hovered quietly in front of her, a mere distortion of the air once more, ephemeral and wingless.
"Please breathe, Eliana," Zara urged gently. "I know it is a great deal to understand."
Eliana gasped for breath, tears streaming down her face. Her skull felt too heavy for her body. Her skin still felt flushed from the battlefield's flames.
"That was him," she croaked. "That was the Emperor." "But..."
"That was the Emperor before he called himself the Emperor. When his name was simply Corian. He was the first of us to escape. And I am sorry that he was."
Remy was right.
The thought kept circling through Eliana's mind. They're angels. The Emperor, his generals, Lord Arkellion, Lord Morbrae. Remy was right.
"And the woman?"
she whispered.
"I know her face."
"I would imagine so."
Zara touched Eliana's hands, and Eliana felt nothing.
"For it is your own, is it not?"
"Partly. More beautiful. More...
more... unkind."
Zara offered a small smile.
"You have a kind face, Eliana. Though you try to make it not so."
Eliana crossed her arms and shut her eyes.
"That's why he recognized me. The Emperor. Corian."
Zara was silent.
"What were they doing?"
Eliana asked.
"That body."
"What he failed to accomplish with your mother before her fall ruined all their work," Zara said. "And what he hopes to finish with you. Resurrection. Our return. And our revenge."
"Our? The angels?"
"Yes, Eliana."
When Eliana opened her eyes once more, her body felt caught on a high, hot wind, floating untethered.
"I hope you are lying to me," she said at last. "Please tell me you're a hallucination. I won't be angry, I swear it."
Zara bowed her head.
"I wish I could."
"I am the daughter of the Blood Queen."
Her voice came out hollow, heavy.
"Daughter of the King's Bane."
"You are."
"I don't believe you."
"That is understandable. It does not, however, change the truth."
Eliana stared at the floor through a furious fog of tears.
"How did I get here then? If I was born back then, to her, and now I'm here, how?"
"That, I'm afraid, is not my story to tell."
Eliana laughed wearily.
"Of course."
"Eliana, I'm not being coy."
Eliana waved Zara silent. She waited until her tears had dried, until she felt she could stand, until she could almost believe the story she told herself, that this was indeed a hallucination. Some horrible dream brought on by whatever Fidelia had used to knock her unconscious. Zara said quietly at the door,
"It's time to leave."
Eliana rose to her feet,
wiped her face on her sleeve, and said to Zara,
"Then get me out of here. I have things to do."
Chapter 39. Riel.
I worry about Tal. I've always worried about him for reasons I couldn't name, and now I understand why. Because he has lived a lie for years, for the sake of this girl, and now is suffering for it. I would never say this to him, but I write it here or else it will burst from my tongue. I hate her for doing this to him. Yes, she was only a child when it all began, but after that, as she grew and learned, what then? What stayed her tongue? Fear or malice?
Journal of Mirren Balastier, Grand Magister of the Forge, June 8th, year 998 of the Second Age. When the doors to the council hall opened, Riel rose from her chair and steeled herself. She did not expect her father to enter and hurry straight toward her, his face pale. Riel's guards formed a tight circle around her.
"Sorry, Lord Commander," said Eveline,
her hands hovering above the hilt of her sword.
"I can't let you past."
"Let him past," ordered King Bastian, the Archon and the Magisterial Council filing in behind him.
As soon as the guards stepped aside, Riel's father hurried over and gathered her close.
"Oh, my darling girl,"
he whispered against the top of her head. Riel's shock was so great that tears sprang to her eyes before she could draw a full breath.
"Papa?"
"I'm sorry. I'm so sorry."
Riel's thoughts had scattered at the touch of her father's hands. How long had it been since he had held her like this?
Years.
She clutched his jacket, burying her face in the scratchy, stiff fabric. All at once, she was 4 years old again, and her mother was still alive. And nothing had happened except a few unexplained odd incidents. Candles extinguishing themselves, an overflowing sink, a crack appearing in the kitchen floor beneath Riel's small, tantrum-throwing body. All at once, she was 4 years old again, and her father still loved her.
"Papa," she whispered, "I was so frightened."
"I know."
He wiped her tears with calloused fingers. The implacable Lord Commander of the Seldarian army was gone, and in his place was a mere aging father.
"He won't hurt you again."
King Bastian, standing before the council table, cleared his throat.
"Lady Riel."
She turned to face the king, but her father remained at her side, and despite everything, a part of Riel's heart she had thought long dead swelled with joy.
"Yes, my king," she curtsied. "I must apologize for my treatment of Lord Dervin."
"No, indeed you must not."
The king's face was grave.
"Lord Dervin has been found guilty of attempted assassination and is being sent home to Belbrion under house arrest for the remainder of his days. He and his accomplices will never again set foot in this castle."
Riel immediately looked past the king to Queen Genevieve, rigid in her chair, and then to Ludovine, who sat in the corner with her hands held tightly in her lap. Audric stood behind her, his hand on her shoulder. When Ludovine's red-rimmed eyes met her own, Riel had to look away.
I don't know what to say, my king," she said quietly. "I cannot be glad for it, and yet I must thank you."
"But you are glad for it," Corian murmured. "In fact, you wish you'd kept going, don't you? You wish you'd squeezed your fist closed, popped his head right off."
"I don't."
His voice was low and angry.
"Don't lie to me, Riel."
She flinched at the sound. It came like a sharp slap. King Bastian's smile was tight, but genuine.
I am glad you are safe, Lady Riel, he said, taking his chair. Now, the Archon has an additional piece of news for you.
The Archon rose from his seat. Riel looked at once to Tal, who was trying unsuccessfully to hide his smile. Beside him, Sloane scowled and elbowed him in the ribs.
Lady Riel, the Archon began. It is the unanimous decision of the Magisterial Council, including myself, that given recent events, we shall forego the remaining two trials and now begin the canonization process.
Riel stared at him, silence gathering around her in thick spools until she at last managed to say, But what does that mean?
This means, Lady Riel, that you have demonstrated tremendous control and power throughout your trials thus far. And that,
interrupted Grand Magister Duval with a broad grin, by surviving a fall off a mountain and arriving back home not only alive but with a flying god's beast, you have more than fulfilled the requirements of the wind trial. The Archon sniffed.
In short, Lady Riel, in the eyes of the Church, you are indeed and inarguably the Sun Queen, as foretold by the angel Aryava, and therefore will be accorded all protections and privileges that are due you as a symbol of the Church and the protector of Seldaria.
As Riel listened to him speak, her heart pounded harder and faster, until it felt ready to burst from her chest. No more trials. No more training. No more dark rooms or hiding herself away. All of this, and a kingdom full of people, a world full of people, cheering her on. But would that be enough? Were five trials, four if she counted Shadow and Sun as one, and a fall off a mountain sufficient to claim her crown? Some people would be satisfied with that, but not all. Some would insist she fight the only remaining element she had not faced. Fire. She glanced at Tal, saw him watching her carefully. A thrill of her oldest, deepest terror raced across her skin. Tal nodded, his mouth in a grim line, but his gaze soft.
Of course, the Archon was saying. I must still discuss what has happened with the other churches of the world. But stories of your trials have already spread so far and so quickly that I doubt I will have trouble convincing them of what and who you are. You will visit them if you must, to prove yourself, or they will come here, and we will show them that any doubts they may have are baseless.
Besides Riel, her father bristled.
Must she be paraded around like a prize horse?
But Riel hardly heard them. She could hear only her mother.
Riel, darling, please help your father put the fire out. Riel, it's time for bed.
Riel, I'm not going to ask you again. She opened her eyes. Breathing in, she smelled the smoke of her parents' house crumbling to ashes, heard the horrible choked sounds of her father sobbing over his wife's body. Corian's words were gentle.
You are not your mother. The flames, if you face them, will not hurt you.
Riel's breath snagged on tears she would not allow to fall. Hurting myself is not what I'm afraid of. The Archon was addressing Riel's father.
I cannot say what the other churches will require of her, but rest assured, Lord Commander, that whatever they request will have to go through me before it so much as touches your daughter's hem.
This also means, Lady Riel, said King Bastian, that once you are anointed Sun Queen,
You will take on not only the privileges of the position, but also the responsibilities. You understand what this means?
Riel shook her head. No, I don't agree to this.
I beg your pardon? Asked the king.
I'll accept your generous offer regarding the wind trial, my king, she said. I survived my fall. I've suffered the wind's wrath. Fine. But, she looked at Tal, imploring. I must complete the fire trial. The Archon frowned.
But Lady Riel, we have decided that is not necessary.
Forgive me, your holiness, interrupted Tal. But Lady Riel is right. He gave her a small smile, then addressed the king. Some in the world will be satisfied with four trials and a fall off a mountain. But not all. Some will insist Riel fight the only element she has not yet faced. And that is fire.
Riel blinked, startled. Did you tell him what to say?
I nudged him that way, Corian replied. Your teacher has a remarkably open mind. Easier to slip into than most.
Please, don't. Riel swallowed hard against the sudden tilt of fear. Not him. Not any of them.
Corian fell silent.
Then his voice coy and curling.
Shall I tell you what secrets I sensed in that pretty blonde head of his?
Is this what you want, Riel?
The entire room was staring at her. It took her a moment to realize that Audric had spoken. She gathered her scattered mind.
It is, she replied. Not only to show the world that I have mastered every element, but also because my mother died in a fire. Of my own creation.
To her left, her father tensed. She reached for his hand, her heart in her throat. After a moment, he curled his fingers around her own. The part of Riel that had come alive when her father embraced her now grew wings and took to the skies.
I would like, she said, to prove to myself and to my father that I am no longer that girl of ashes and ruin. I am stronger than she was. I am stronger than any flame that burns.
That evening, Riel skipped dinner and instead paced through her rooms.
Are you sure you don't want something to eat, my lady? Asked Eveline from her post by the door.
I'm quite sure, Eveline, thank you.
Eveline glanced out at the terrace.
Do you think your beastly friend will be with us for long, my lady?
Riel grinned to see the Chevalier there, sleeping curled up on the dusk-lit stone terrace as happily as a cat. A very large, very horse-like cat.
I don't know the ways of God's beasts, she told Eveline, but I certainly hope she stays.
Eveline tugged at her collar uneasily.
Do you think if I asked, she would let me pet her? Why, Eveline? I've never seen you so bashful.
A knock on the door interrupted them.
Lady Ludovine here to see Lady Riel, called out Darshal from the corridor.
All joy vanished from Riel's heart.
Please let her in, Eveline.
Eveline looked dubious but obeyed, her hand on her sword. Ludovine entered, looking utterly wrung out, her hair a mess, her face red and swollen.
Hello.
She could not meet Riel's eyes.
I wanted to see if you were all right.
Well, I'm alive, Riel said shortly, then winced.
Sorry. I'm fine. Just resting.
Ludovine nodded slowly, sitting on one of the half-side chairs.
I see.
A terrible silence filled the room. At last, Riel blew out a breath and took the seat opposite Ludovine.
Lou, I don't know what you want me to say or do right now, but I won't apologize for I don't want you to apologize, Ludovine snapped. Then she scrubbed her hand over her face and sighed. Do I wish you hadn't tried to kill my father? Yes. Do I wish he hadn't been sent home? She paused. No. I'm glad of it. I'm so furious with him, I can hardly think straight.
She shook her head, staring into the fire. Then she moved to kneel before Riel, gathered Riel's hands in hers.
Am I glad you are alive? Ludovina whispered. Oh, my darling.
She pulled Riel down into an awkward hug.
I love you so much, I feel I might break from it. I'm so glad you're all right.
Riel helped Ludovine rise and walked her to the bed. She drew back the covers and helped Ludovine lie down, then snuggled close beside her. Resting her cheek against Ludovine's shoulder, she let Ludovine cry herself out, and when at last Ludovine stopped, Riel looked up with a smile.
You'd better not wipe your nose in my hair.
Ludovine let out a shaky laugh.
Can I stay here tonight? I insist that you do.
Another knock on the door.
Prince Audric to see Lady Riel.
Let him in,
said Ludovine, and Riel at once. Audric entered, then hesitated when he saw Riel and Ludovine in bed.
I can come back later.
Don't you dare,
Ludovine patted the pillows.
Come, we're having a party.
Audric approached cautiously.
Are you crying, Lou?
Yes, she is, answered Riel.
And if you don't hurry up and get over here, she'll start all over again, and you'll feel terrible about it. Audric rubbed a hand through his hair.
Is this really the wisest thing to do? I mean, considering.
Audric, calm down. There's not anything wrong in it. I almost died today. I thought I'd never see either of you again, and I'd like my friends near tonight. Come, lie down with us.
She sat up, extended a hand to him.
Like when we were little?
His expression as he took her hand was unbearably fond.
We're not little anymore.
Pretend it for me. We used to play pretend all the time. Remember?
Ludovine laughed.
I recall a certain prince, obsessed with pretending he was a horse day and night, running down the halls on all fours and banging up his knees.
Audric settled in the bed beside Riel, above the blankets. Disappointment nettled her, but she bit her tongue to keep from teasing him. She would be satisfied with his nearness and the solid heat of his body.
I was a very good horse, I thought, said Audric. I had the neigh down and everything.
There was a particular day, Riel added, when you tucked one of your mother's scarves into your trousers and pretended it was your tail.
Eveline's cough sounded suspiciously like it was meant to cover laughter.
Go on, said Audric, stretching out on the bed with a happy sigh. Keep embarrassing me. I don't mind.
Beside Riel, hidden from view by the bed linens, Audric touched his hand to hers. She wrapped her fingers around his, warmth rushing sweetly down her body, and felt herself dangerously close to moving right where she shouldn't.
You should have visited me sooner.
Riel tried not to scowl. Garver Randell had done that enough for the both of them.
It was rather a busy day yesterday, she said dryly. What with the attempted murder and all? Besides, I saw the king's healer right away.
That man's an idiot. Why do you think Audric comes to me instead?
Garver screwed a lid onto the jar and shoved it across the table at her.
Take a spoonful 4 times a day until it's gone. Wasp fog is a nasty poison. You'll feel queasiness for days. Can't do anything about it, but this will help.
How much do I owe you for it?
Only this. Next time you're poisoned or almost murdered or stabbed or strangled or...
I get the point.
Yes, well, next time. Don't wait a night before coming to see me.
Garver heaved himself up from his chair with a tired grunt.
Prompt, proper care conducted by healers who are not idiots can make the difference between life and death. even for sun queens.
With his back turned, Riel rolled her eyes.
I heard that, he said mildly.
Riel grinned, then looked out the open door to the courtyard, where Audric was showing Garva's little son Simon how the Chevale liked to be petted. Beyond the courtyard, people crowded at Garva's front gate, gaping at the prince and the god's beast, probably wondering why this boy was special enough to get an audience with the creature.
It's funny, she murmured, watching tensely as Simon reached for the Chevale's neck with his eyes squeezed shut.
But the Chevale only closed her eyes and leaned in to his touch. Garva had started to sweep.
Hmm? What's funny?
Etheria doesn't usually like it when people touch her.
Who in God's name is Etheria?
The Chevale. Do you like the name?
Whatever her name is, I'd rather not have her stomping up my flowers.
Besides me, Riel said, Etheria only lets two people touch her. Audric. And now,
she smiled as the beast nibbled at Simon's hair. The boy went perfectly still and stood wide-eyed while Audric shook with silent laughter.
And now, it seems, your son is the second.
Chapter 40 Eliana. Tender lost lambs will wander into our fold, dumb and blind, driven by his call. Gather them close, teach them his word. Remake them as he demands. Punish those who defy him, for they are truly lost. The First Book of Fidelia. When the door opened, Eliana hurried out into the brightly lit corridor. A male guard stood just outside, staring blankly at the wall. A ring of keys dangled from his hand. Eliana found the two keys Zara had described, one a plain and dirty brass, the other thin and silver, and removed them from his ring. It was as Zara had said. The soldier didn't move, or even blink. She stepped back, watching his face. The corner of his mouth twitched. According to Zara, a proper angel would be able to influence the man's mind for as long as necessary. But, as a bodiless wraith, Zara could only affect him for seconds at a time. And even then, she told Eliana bitterly, her ability remained unpredictable and easily drained. The man's hand moved, as if in sleep. He blinked. His body shifted.
Go.
His mouth moved, but Zara's voice emerged.
Hurry.
The man would awaken. And soon. Keys in hand, Eliana ran down the deserted hallway in her bare feet. Metallic doors lined the grey stone walls. She found the alcove that Zara had told her about, the entrance to a supply closet, and pressed her body flat against the wall. Eyes watering after so long in darkness, she squinted up at the buzzing yellow lights lining the ceiling and waited. A minute passed, then Zara drifted into the alcove.
Through here, quickly, she whispered, gesturing at the closet door.
I'm sorry, Eliana. I wish my protection was as strong as you deserve. But the fall damaged so many things, including the minds of wraiths.
Don't apologize. You're doing fine.
Eliana used the brass key to open the closet door and hurried inside. The space was long and narrow, lined with shelves crammed with tied bundles, packs of food, boxes labeled with unfamiliar lettering. She crouched, searching the lower shelves.
I don't recognize that writing.
One of the old angelic languages, Zara explained. To be initiated into Fidelia, you must learn all five.
And those lights outside, in the hallway. I've never seen anything like them.
Galvanized energy. One of the Emperor's many experiments. Have you found them?
Not yet. Wait.
Eliana opened a wooden crate with metal clasps. Inside was an array of weaponry and gear, including her own. Whistler, Nox, Tora, Tempest. Only her beloved Arabeth was missing, Lost forever, she supposed, on the filthy floors of sanctuary. She strapped her holsters to her legs, her arms, her waist, sheathed the knives and straightened with a sigh. Zara watched, a smile rippling across her face.
Better?
Much.
Before we go,
Zara pointed at another shelf.
This is yours, I believe.
Her necklace. Eliana's heart lifted to see its battered brass face, though now the sight of those familiar lines reminded her of Zara's words, the daughter of the Lightbringer. Did she believe such a wild story? And if it was true, how much of the truth, if any, had Rosen known? And could she even still call Rosen her mother, and Remy her brother, Joseph her father? A fist of sorrow seized her heart, but she shoved away her questions. None of them mattered if she couldn't first escape this place. She settled the chain around her neck and said to Zara,
"Lead the way."
They returned to the corridor, keeping to the shadows.
"Here,"
Zara said at last, drifting to a stop outside one of the metal doors. Black numbers reading 36 had been stamped on its surface. Eliana's pulse jumped as she fumbled with the long silver key and let herself inside.
"Navi,"
she whispered, once she had pulled the door shut.
"Don't be afraid."
The air in Navi's cell was stale and squalid, waste and sweat, and something acrid and medicinal that made Eliana's tongue tingle. She saw a small pile against the far wall, rushed over, hesitated, then took Navi gently by the shoulders and turned her over. Hovering beside her, Zara made a soft noise of pity.
"Oh, Navi,"
Eliana breathed, unable to hide her shock. Navi's head had been shaved, and her skin was a mosaic of pain. Ugly, dark bruises, angry red wounds, thin black markings with numbered figures beside them, as if Navi had been labeled with instructions for some malevolent seamstress. At Eliana's touch, Navi moaned, her swollen face crumpling with pain. Eliana whispered,
"What have they done to her?" "Their work is abominable,"
Zara said, her voice low and furious.
"I have tried to stop them when I can, but without giving away my presence to Zemyaza, there is only so much I can do."
Questions gathered angrily on Eliana's tongue, but she would ask them later. She heaved Navi's body off the ground and slung the girl's limp arm around her shoulders.
"Show me the way out of here. I cannot hide you again,"
Zara whispered, wringing her smoky hands together.
"I used the last strength I had on that soldier in the corridor."
Navi mumbled something pained against Eliana's shoulder.
"How long until your strength returns?"
Eliana asked. Zara looked away, as if ashamed.
"I cannot say. My queen, I swear to you, I wasn't always so weak."
"We'll just have to escape like normal people. Let's go."
They left Navi's cell and hurried down a maze of corridors, the strange galvanized lights humming overhead. Zara drifted ahead, then hurried back in time to warn Eliana of approaching Fidelia soldiers. Eliana crouched with Navi in the shadows of a small alcove, her hand gently over Navi's mouth. The soldiers passed, carrying a dead-eyed woman on a canvas stretcher. Bulbous dark growths marred her body. Eliana's stomach turned.
"It's clear,"
Zara whispered and led the way once more. Gritting her teeth against the persistent nausea of Zara's nearness, Eliana followed. When they exited the compound into a flat dirt yard bordered by tall stone walls, they took cover behind crates piled high with stinking wrapped heaps that she suspected were bodies. Night stretched vast above the compound, with faint blue at the horizon.
"Are we on a mountain?"
Eliana whispered.
"Yes," answered Zara, "and not far from the northern border of Ventera."
That explained the cold and the wind. How far from Rinthos?